with the Apostle Paul. Anything else anybody remembers? Yes, Apollos. That was a really big point. We'll talk about that tonight. Apollos was this highly educated man at any time period. He was from Alexandria, which was probably the most famous educational center in the world at the time. Alexandria, named after Alexander the Great, and it was in the northern part of Egypt. And they boasted a library of over 500,000 books and scrolls and things. And it was the center. I don't know what you would compare it to today, but the center of education. So, and he was, you know, pretty important guy. Anything else anybody can remember about Aquila and Priscilla? Okay, well, that's a pretty good start. Let's turn in your Bibles to Acts chapter 18. And I think if there's one word we could describe this couple is that they were available. They're ready. If you need us, we're here. They were ready to move from one city to the next to help Paul. They were ready to help somebody that needed orientation and theological orientation. They were available. Our banner's up here. Here am I, send me. That's kind of our theme for this year. Here am I, send me. And we have, this is one of the most awesome congregations. If we have one fault, I think we probably try to do too much. But everybody's willing to help, and, you know, so it's like, well, let's do it. You know, it's because, like, people just get with it. I remember the first time I was in a meeting with Robin and the VBS gang, and it was, anybody interested in VBS? And so they met over at the old building, and, you know, and they one started saying this and that and everything. And Rob said, see? And they, like, it was fast, and they got it organized, like, you know. People are willing to help and get with it. So that's what we're going to focus on tonight with Aquila and Priscilla. But let's start here in Acts chapter 18. And the Bible says, after this, Paul left Athens and went to Corinth. Now, in chapter 17, Keith is going to talk a lot about this tomorrow, about chapter 17. So I won't mention a whole lot. But he was there, which was also an educational center as well, philosophical center, on the Areopagus, and he was going around the city and was appalled at how many altars were dedicated to all these different gods. Over the centuries, atheism has never been a problem. It's only probably in the in the 18th century that people start questioning the existence of God. You know, we're enlightened, we're above all this, but throughout all of history of mankind, people have never questioned whether there's God. Their biggest fault was they had too many gods. You know, the God over the weather, the God over the fertility, you know, the God over the waters, and so on. So Paul was appalled at how, some versions say superstitious, some say religious, but he was able to explain to them about the altar that was dedicated to the unknown God, the one that they were afraid they might miss out on. They wanted to cover their bases, so they had an altar to maybe some God they weren't aware of. And so then Paul explains that to them. But his reception was mixed, but he leaves Athens, he comes to Corinth, okay? And they're very close by, maybe 50 miles away from each other. And I don't know specifically why Corinth, except for it was another major city there. Nearby that he was going through. But verse 2, it says, and he found a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. Now, there's not a whole lot of written in the history books about Claudius the emperor making the Jews leave Rome. But Suetonius is a Roman historian, and he wrote about this. It's not a biblical, he's not a biblical writer, it's somebody from history. But he mentions that Claudius had the Jews leave Rome because there was always contention about this Christus guy. And so we see how the Jews and Christians clashed a lot. The Jews that had closed minds, didn't want to accept the prophecies of the Old Testament and focus on Jesus. And the Jews today, to this I heard a real intellectual Jew that I listen to periodically, and he has a lot of good insights about the Old Testament. But he said, we don't believe that Jesus is God. He might be the Messiah, but he's not God. And that's kind of the beef that they have, modern day Jews, with Jesus. But so there's a lot of contention we'll see here in our reading today, here in this chapter and all throughout the book of Acts. The persecution of the Christians from religious Jews, because they didn't believe that Jesus was their Messiah. They were expecting a general, a warrior, and Jesus didn't. He said, my kingdom's not of this world. It's just not, that's not the way it is. My kingdom's a spiritual kingdom. So there was a lot of contention there, and the Claudius just got fed up with it and sent the Jews out. Now, that might have included some Christians. We have Aquila here. He left. It's about the year 49 when that happened. And one thing that Suetonius, when he describes this in his writings for the history of Rome, what it does is it helps verify or vindicate the veracity of the scriptures, because Luke writes about it. It's not something he's making up. This really happened. The Jews got kicked out of Rome. Aquila was a Jew. We don't know exactly if his wife was. She probably was as well, Priscilla. But he's kicked out, and so they leave there, and they end up in Corinth. Now, Paul and Aquila and Priscilla, I have trouble with Aquila and Aquila, because in Portuguese is Aquila, but anyway. So if I mix up the words here, Aquila. Paul and Aquila and Priscilla got together here, and it says in verse 2 that Paul found a Jew named Aquila, recently come from Italy. The word found, I'm not sure, and we'll never know. Was it by coincidence? Or was it God's providence that they hooked up? Now, we'll find out that they did, like Judy said, they had the same profession. They were tent makers, but maybe Paul was, you know, needing to work. Obviously, he was needing to work, and he was up someplace where they sell the materials, and he ran across Aquila and Priscilla. But whether it was God's providence or just a coincidence, God used their encounter in a powerful way, in a wonderful way. You know, I think about my life. Even before I was a Christian, I went to Brazil as an exchange student and lived with the Brazilian family for a year and learned not only the language but the culture and things. And I feel like that was God's providence in my life, preparing me for what I was going to come do later. Now, you can think, well, that's just hogwash or whatever, but I really believe, or at least he used that experience, okay? But Acts chapter 17, Paul was explaining to the Athenians, he says, that, talking about God, he says he determines the bounds of our habitation. So God has a hand in where we are and where we live. You know, he's kind of, it's all beyond us. It's higher, his ways are higher than our ways. But I feel like God brought them together, because certainly he used this precious couple to bless Paul, and we'll see more reasons why here. Okay, continuing here in verse 2, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome, and he went to see them. And because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them and worked, for they were tent makers by trade. Okay, already we can see that not only they could help out each other, but where was Paul going to live in Corinth? He needed a place to stay. What's the text say? He worked with them, but he stayed with them. Yeah, for a year and a half, or a little longer, actually. He's going to live with Aquila and Priscilla. Now, I really believe, even though they made tents, I don't think that they lived in tents. I think that they financially were successful. They may still have kept their franchise in Rome, started a new franchise in Corinth, I don't know, but they're probably pretty good at their work and pretty well off. And I say that because later on we'll read about the church meeting in their home in Ephesus, and later back in Rome and stuff. So It's maybe at Corinth they didn't really have a place, but they certainly did at Ephesus and back in Rome, because the Bible talks about the church meeting in their house, okay? So Paul's there working with them, and he's staying with them, and so it shows that they're available. They're ready. Hey, you need a place to stay? You know, stay with us. And very generous, very kind. Doesn't matter how wonderful your house guests are, it always throws a wrench in your daily routine. You know, it just does. That's just the price of hospitality. You know how it is, okay? It doesn't matter how wonderful these people are, but you know, it's a different situation. So, but they were ready, available, and opened their home up for Paul. Okay, verse 4. And he reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath and tried to persuade Jews and Greeks. Okay, now I think maybe Keith's going to talk a little bit more about this tomorrow, about Paul's traditional method of evangelism. He would first go to the synagogues, and what he would do and teach, and his method of teaching Christ was different than because these people knew the Old Testament. But when he would teach Gentiles, people that weren't familiar with the Old Testament, he would teach in a different method. The end result is the same, but the methods were different. But he would first go to the synagogues. And in Romans chapter 10, beginning verse 1, Paul says, you know, he says, I'd give anything if my countrymen would be saved. He loved his people. Even today, whether you're a religious Jew or just a secular Jew, there's a difference, okay? Jewishness is like being an American, but it's also a religion, okay? You can be an atheist who is a Jew, or you can be a Jewish Orthodox or religious Jew, okay? But whether you're religious or you're not religious, they still have a bond because of their culture, and they really give a lot of importance in marrying, you know, a Jewish, marrying other people. I had somewhat a lot of contact in Brazil with a Jewish synagogue. Twice I went for a Passover. You know, I was invited to be there with Passover and talk with them and things. And some of the guys would say, yeah, our parents would offer us a new car if we, you know, married a Jewish girl. You know, really trying to keep them, you know, the culture tied up together. And so, so first of all, he would always go into the city on the Sabbath, and he'd go to the synagogue and try to convince people. Here, there happened to be Greeks. Now, the Greeks didn't have to, they didn't have to become Jews to be pleasing to God, but if they lived within a Jewish community, they had to respect their laws and whatnot. But we'll see that there are, for example, later on here, we'll see Titus Justus, a worshiper of God. Now, he's a Greek, he's not a Jew, but he obviously participated in the synagogue service on the Sabbath. So Paul reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath and tried to persuade Jews and Greeks. Okay? Now, verse 5. When Silas and Timothy arrived from Macedonia, Paul was occupied with the word, testifying to the Jews that the Christ was Jesus. Okay, up until now, Paul's working during the week, making tents, supporting himself. Later on, you can read, for example, in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 7 through 15, where he talks, and in other chapter 9, 11, 12 as well, he talks about how he didn't receive anything from the church in Corinth. He didn't want to be a weight on anybody, and he didn't want anybody to think that he was there for money's sake. So he's out there working, supporting himself. Now Timothy and Silas show up from Macedonia, Philippi, and if you'll remember, Paul thanks the church of Philippi for being, he said, basically, you're my sole supporter. And they on several occasions, they send him financial support to help him in his ministry. And he talks about that in chapter 4 as well, of Philippians. But so until then, he's working with his own hands, and he's, you know, supporting himself. And as a matter of fact, Paul, in the book of Ephesians, remember he said, you know, those people used to steal, don't steal anymore, but work with your hands so that you have something to give to those who are in need. So Paul had a really good work ethic, but after he received financial support, he was able to be supported to preach full time there in Corinth. Okay, now I won't go into a whole lot of detail about this, but I did mission work in Brazil for 32 years, and I've been going back and forth for 10, and studied for 2 years of missions, masters of missions, and university level. And so I have a little bit of experience in some study, and I'm not saying that to brag, but I'm just saying that it's more complicated than we sometimes realize. Just think, well, we just send some money overseas, and that'll be our mission work. But it's a lot more complicated. There's, and like I said, I can, don't want to get into a whole lot of things about that, but it's good for missionaries or local evangelists to have an occupation as well as preaching. There's very few churches overseas that can afford to pay a full-time evangelist. And so if they have an occupation, then if they can't be supported, they can support themselves and still preach as much as they're able to, okay? We have four leadership training schools in Brazil, national, different parts of the country. But there's one out west that's really neat, and it's supported by a church in Texas. But they pay for support a person to go through the leadership training school. There, it's a 2-year training school, and then they continue to support them to go to college. Now you kind of like, what, you know? But college there is a lot less expensive than. Probably it's not as expensive as the books for a student here. You know, it's not that much, but for them, it's a big expense. And so they'll go through the leadership training school and study Bible intensive for 2 years, and then they can get their college degree. They're paid for, and then they'll be self-supporting, but they'll have that Bible training, and they can preach and teach. You know, it's for men and women because you have preachers' wives and Bible school teachers and everything. On the 30th of this month, there's going to be a young lady visiting Becky and I, and she went through that school. Today she's a lawyer, and she helps with the children's home and everything, but and also a great Bible teacher and things. But she was able to go. She did the 2-year training in the Bible school there, and then finished her degree in law and stuff. So it's a really neat thing, and it's a way of kind of finding something that works in other cultures. In the United States, we don't know how to have a church without a paid full-time minister. And that's a luxury in most places around the world, outside of the United States. So it's just something, and we could spend the whole time talking about that. But I just wanted you to see that in the Bible, it authorizes us to support missionaries, but it's also good for them to have a professional as well. And also sometimes too, because even though you may not be practicing, I think of Brad Harrod, for example. You know, he has a medical degree. So he could be doing other things rather than preaching, but he's chosen to preach. You know, we support Alex in Brazil, Alex Giroto, but he could be a professional soccer player for a long time, but he's chosen to preach and things. So anyway, that's just something I wanted to share with you all here. Okay, verse 6. And when they opposed and reviled him, he shook his garments and said to them, talking to the Jews that weren't going to accept Jesus as the Christ, okay? And he said to them, your blood be on your own heads. I am innocent. From now on, I will go to the Gentiles. Now, he, you know, Jesus said, when you go someplace and you're rejected, you know, don't throw your pearls before pigs. He's told the apostles to, you know, shake the dust off their feet and move on. Now, he's not saying here he's never going to go to teach Jews again, because every city he goes to the synagogue first, tries to teach them, and then he goes to the Gentiles. Paul was chosen to be apostle to the Gentiles, but he still wants his countrymen to be saved, okay? Verse 7, and he left there and went to the house of a man, Titius Justus, a worshiper of God. Okay, now he's not a Jew, he's a Gentile, but he's a worshiper of God, sort of like Cornelius. There's lots of God-fearing people. You know, they're still under the patriarchal law and system and accepted before God. His house was next door to the synagogue. Crispus, the ruler of the synagogue, believed in the Lord together with his entire household, And many of the Corinthians, hearing Paul, believed and were baptized. Okay? You see that if they believed, why wouldn't they be baptized? That's a result of their faith. We're saved by grace through faith, but faith includes repentance, being born again, confession, baptism, and living faithfully, okay? So they heard the word, they believed, and certainly were united with Christ in baptism. Verse 9, and the Lord said to Paul one night in a vision, do not be afraid, but go on speaking, and do not be silent, for I am with you, and no one will attack you to harm you, for I have many in the city who are my people. So that's pretty neat promise that God's given him. Don't be afraid. You know, he's had all this animosity, all this blowback from the Jewish people, but God says, you know, I'm with you, and I've got people to support you. Verse 11, and he stayed a year and 6 months teaching the word of God among them. Now, as far as we know, this is the second longest stay of Paul in any one city. He stayed the longest in Ephesus at 3 years, but a year and a half here in Corinth. Here. Okay, verse 12. But when Gallio was proconsul, or governor of Achaia, the Jews, that's the area where Corinth is, the Jews made a united attack on Paul and brought him before the tribunal, saying, this man is persuading people to worship God contrary to the law. But when Paul was about to open his mouth, Gallio said to the Jews, if it were a matter of wrongdoing or vicious crime, O Jews, I would have reason to accept your complaint. But since it is a matter of questions about words and names and your own law, see to it yourselves. I refuse to be a judge of these things. And he drove them from the tribunal. And they all seized Sosthenes, the ruler of the synagogue, and beat him in front of the tribunal. But Gallio paid no attention to any of this. And so they were mad because they thought the Romans would have taken care of Paul. They just bring this, it worked with Jesus, right? They brought him before the Roman government and they took care of him. They thought that Paul would do the same thing, but Gallio said, hey, this is just a matter of your religious questioning. You know, it's semantics among you all. Of course, he didn't understand. He didn't understand the difference between Judaism and Christianity and that actually Christianity is a fulfillment of the Jewish faith. It's not against the Jewish faith, it's a fulfillment. But the point I wanted to bring out here is Paul talks to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 1 through 8. He says, brothers shouldn't take brothers to court. That should never happen. He says, what are people from the world going to think of the church? And what's going to be the end of your relationship with one another? Look, there's got to be, surely there's somebody wise enough in the congregation who could help take care of this situation, because that's what was happening. There's a lot of problems in the Corinthian church, and that was one of them. One brother was taking another to court. So here's an example. It shows us what happened. Gallio didn't want to hear about it, thought it was ridiculous, and it was shameful before unbelievers. So Paul talks about this in chapter 6 of Corinthians, about never to do that. Okay, time-wise, I've got a few more minutes here for our break. Verse 18, after this, Paul stayed many days longer and then took leave of the brothers and set sail for Syria, with him Priscilla and Aquila. At Cenchrea, he had his hair cut, for he was under a vow. And that's to show that he fulfilled his vow is what it is. We don't know what vow he'd taken. Was it a temporary Nazarite vow? We don't know what it was, but it's just put in there. Possibly to show us that he respected Jewish customs and culture. As a Christian, you know, you wouldn't have to do that, but under the Old Testament, just because, for example, I've mentioned this before, but if I were going to do mission work in Israel and wanted to be a good missionary, I wouldn't eat at McDonald's. You say, why not? What's wrong with McDonald's? It's American. And I think, well, the religious Jewish people don't mix milk products with meat products in the same meal. It's an anathema to them, okay? The Old Testament says don't cook the mother and the calf and the mother's milk, you know, so they don't do that. So even though there's nothing wrong with that, as a Christian, we could eat McDonald's, you know, and I do here. But in Israel, if I wanted to be a good missionary, I'm not going to do that because it'll be a unnecessary stumbling block. So you'll see where Paul does a lot of things. And in Acts chapter 15, there was a resolution there, a conference, and about their asking the brethren there in Antioch to respect the Jewish community there, and ask, there were certain customs that they asked them to respect. So that's the only reason I can think of that why Luke leaves this part in here, that he had taken a vow and he finished it with, had his hair cut. Verse 19, and they came to Ephesus, and he left them there, but he himself went into the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. Okay, there he goes. In Ephesus, a new city, goes straight to the synagogue. When they asked him to stay for a longer period, he declined, but on taking leave of them, he said, I will return to you if God wills. And he set his sail from Ephesus. Now, he leaves, he's headed back to Antioch, but he leaves Aquila and Priscilla there in Ephesus. Verse 22, when he had landed at Caesarea, he went up and greeted the church, then went down to Antioch. After spending some time there, he departed and went from one place to the next through the region of Galatia and Phrygia, strengthening all the disciples, okay? So Paul went on mission, he went on what we call three missionary journeys, but part of his missionary journeys were going back through those congregations and strengthening those young Christians. It wasn't that they weren't taught the truth, they weren't Christians, but they needed encouragement. And it's so important. And, you know, here in the States, we just take everything for granted, I think. But you go to these places and people are so appreciative. I know when we were there in Brazil, and every 2 years we would come back to the States. But the year that we didn't come back, the Henderson Church would send an elder and his wife, and maybe the minister and his wife or something. And the Brazilians, they just were so enthralled and just so appreciative, you know, that we thought of them and that we considered them that important. And just, you know, we think, oh, they can take care of it, but we all need a shot in the arm, you know. And so that's really important. I'll be going, the Lord willing, next month back to Brazil. We're going to a different state. I'm going to Rio, two different cities in Rio de Janeiro, one congregation about... there's wanting to install new elders, and so I'm going to be teaching on eldership. And the other one is a new church that's getting started in another city there in Rio. So ask me to be praying for me in that. And also spend one Sunday in Belo Horizonte as well. But okay, let's stop there and come back here at 7:15. Does that work? Go get some coffee.